Hey, it's me, and it's you, and if you hang out with me on Instagram, you will know that I posted, it seemed a little bit cryptic, it wasn't my intention, so I'm not a massive fan of cryptic, but the scale of this announcement felt a little bit of intrigue was appropriate, and I've decided I wanted to save this announcement specifically for you and this podcast, my way of thanking you for hanging out with me for the last 36 weeks. It's been a joy, and I thought, you know what? Such has been your response to the podcast. I wanted this announcement to be a podcast first announcement. So I've not said anything about this on Twitter, on Instagram, or on Facebook. It's for you first. My way of saying thank you for hanging out for the last 30 weeks. So, as of 5 days ago, Saturday the 26th of September, 2020, I, CK Golding, am now writing my first book. Jesus, it doesn't quite feel real until you say it out loud to you guys. But yeah, it is real. It's been real for the last 5 days. It's been very real as I've thrown myself headlong into writing my first book. And if you followed this podcast for the last 30 plus weeks, there's so many things I've shared with you that make me the least likely candidate for writing a book. But I'm going to talk about that in greater detail with you in a bit. Also, this week, I'm curious, over the years, has your taste in the opposite sex and what you find attractive, sexy, hot, has that evolved? Or have you always just, you know, if you're a bloke, being a tit man? Or or if you're a woman, have you always just been into, like, massive dongs or big hands or just massive dongs? I don't know, like, has your taste evolved over the years? Has it changed? Mine has evolved, and I only recently realised, in fact, this week, I only realised the degree to which my tastes have evolved. So I'm going to elaborate on that also this week. Plus, I will be sharing with you some tidbits from our new resident psychologist. I spoke about her last week, and I got her on the show, or at least I got her on the phone. Hey.
Hello.
Hey. How the hell are you?
I'm good. How are you? I've never done this before. I'm like, what?
My new favorite psychology graduate. I say my new favorite psychology graduate, but I've never had a favorite psychology graduate. And I suspect it's going to take a lot to topple the mighty Rochelle. I don't know, she's just cool. And, you know, if you listen to last week's episode, episode 36, you will know that I think she's cool. So I reached out to her and I said, would you like to have a chat? So she did. So I'm going to play you very short snippets from our phone call during this episode. And Rochelle, you'll be hearing more from her in future weeks, because as you know, I love psychology. Like, how often has psychology been a theme of this podcast? Massive fan. So to just stumble across Rochelle on Twitter and to listen to her podcast and to discover that she's just so outspoken, so direct, honest, candid, it just brought me so much joy. And she's 23 and she's like super bright. But we're going to talk more about Rochelle later on this week, or at least in this episode. Can I just say, I feel like I need to give you a warning. Now, I've returned to my old habits of recording this podcast very late. It is now Thursday, the 1st of October. Happy October, by the way. It is 10:30 in the evening, and some students have just recently moved in next door. So for some reason, I seem to care about the amount of noise I'm making. So I am... That's why I probably sound a little bit different to usual, because, you know, it's been an empty house next door for as long as I... Anyway, it doesn't matter. So, yeah, and I'm also a little bit, like, drained as well tonight. I don't know why, but I just wanted to give you guys an insight into why I sound a little bit different today. It is because I'm trying to be a courteous human rather than a total bell end, which is rare for me, and I'm not sure I care for it. But anyway, how are you? How's your week been? How was your September? Reflecting on September, is it me or did that just fly past? I looked at my calendar yesterday. It said September the 30th, and I was like, how? Though, how is it the 30th of September? I don't know. I don't know. September has just been like a fart in the wind. It's just come and gone. How do you feel? Did September feel like 30 days to you? Did it feel significantly less, more? It's been a quick one. Can I just say also that last week's episode, it was a really weird one because as I was recording last week's episode, I just felt in the zone. I felt, oh, this is, I'm really enjoying this. And that's not to say I don't always enjoy recording these episodes, but off, as you can imagine, some weeks I'm bang up for it, some weeks not necessarily, but I just, you know, I persevere. Last week's was just a joy from start to finish. I released it into the world and I was like, I think this might be, if not in my top three favorite ever, it might be my favorite ever. It just felt right. And your feedback echoed my feelings towards it. And you know, I don't always necessarily read your comments verbatim, but I will definitely be doing that right now. So there's just three quick direct messages and emails that you've sent. And as ever, I always welcome you to send me an email or send me a direct message on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, because I delight in your feedback. So I got this yesterday. I think this was either yesterday or today. Hey, CK, loved your last episode, man. Just finished and I laughed a lot. Ha ha. This is from a girl, by the way. Loved it when you did an impression of an annoying girlfriend who steals your trousers. 'Cause she wants to smell like you all day and you just tell her to piss off. Ha ha, perfect. And that Rochelle bird sounds worth listening to. I also love the way you keep asking yourself questions and also asking us, the listener, too, and encouraging us to write in. I like that interaction and it makes perfect sense to get people involved. Great stuff. That made me really happy, that comment, actually, because like it's very meta for a listener to reference the fact that I always ask questions. But I replied to that listener saying it's just in my nature to like ask questions. I am a questioner anyway, and it just translates into the podcast. So that was a glorious message. So thank you for sending that. I received this direct message on Twitter. Hey, CK, honestly, after an utterly wank week, this week's podcast is just giving me endless delight. Tremendous work. You're at your most enjoyable when ranting. And then, what else have we got here? Some reference about me saying that most people would rather shag a bottle of milk than me. Fucking hell, CK, gold. So that was glorious. And, thank you sincerely for sending me that. That was a glorious message to receive. You don't always necessarily expect people to be saying, "You got me through work, dude." But that was glorious. So thank you so much for sending that. Also, on direct message on Twitter, I had, "Dude, your podcast makes me smile, and I always want to reply to the questions you're asking. However, I'm walking home, it's raining, and I don't have an umbrella, so I'm just keeping it short. Hope you're well." So it was really interesting, and I always just assume, like me, because I listen to my favorite podcasts at home, but I've learned that many of you listen to me on the go as you're walking around, walking the dog. Some of you are walking the dog on a run. So I don't think I could listen to a podcast running. In fact, I don't even listen to podcasts when I'm in the gym. I feel I need music. So how do you listen to this, or how do you listen to podcasts generally? Let a brother know. Either way, thank you for your ongoing feedback and contributions and opinions. I read them all, as you know. I reply to them all and they delight me. So cheers. And in fact, it is feedback of this nature that is exactly why I wanted to reveal that I'm writing a book. Is that the second time I've said it? Third. It feels more comfortable now actually saying it, because I've told like two of my besties and I've now told you. I've not put it anywhere online, so I wanted to tell you first. And it has just been the weirdest thing. I'll tell you the genesis of why I decided I wanted to write the book in a second, but first, I just want to tell you basically what the book is about, okay? It's a non-fiction book, although actually, is it? I'm not going to tell you the title of it now, although I know exactly what it's going to be called. But ultimately, it is using a mix of my own first-hand anecdotes with a blend of fictitious stories, and ultimately it's detailing everything I've learned in the last 5 years about getting my creative work featured on TV, in newspapers, magazines, on radio, and influential websites. And this book is targeted specifically at independent creatives who want to up their public profile. It's killing me to not tell you what the book is called, but essentially everything I've learned over the last 5 years as a creator, which I now obviously do for brands, is ultimately how do you get your work noticed, featured in a newspaper, in a magazine, on TV, on radio, on like those monster websites. In the last 5 years, I've been honoured, I guess. Honoured sounds a bit wanky. I feel I need to take that back. But I've been delighted to have been featured on all of the above. And I've just learned that it is not unattainable. Quite the opposite. It's actually frustratingly easy if you're willing to just follow a few steps that I didn't necessarily realize were steps that were repeatable, but then I started repeating them and the same things were happening, especially with 61 Hugs, my short film. If you're not familiar with 61 Hugs and you're new to this podcast, hi, I'm CK. I'm a writer, creator, filmmaker, presenter. And visit 61hugs.com for my, can I say my double award-winning short film? I think I can because it's what it is. So visit 61hugs.com. It's my short film. What is it, 26 minutes, I think? And I released that in 2018, won 2 awards, took me to America, got about 3 newspaper front covers, radio, screened at the biggest festival in the UK. And I was able to accomplish all of that based on everything that I'd learned from my projects that came before it. You know, my first big meaty project was in 2015 when I survived in London for 6 months with just £100. And that challenge was the first time I realized, in fact, that challenge was the first time that I was invited onto TV to talk about something I'd done. And I learned so much retrospectively. At the time when I was going through that shitstorm, I didn't really realize what was happening. But then once the dust settled, then I realized, oh, that's why that project worked. That's why newspapers wanted to talk about it. That's why Red Bull loved it. That's why the TV invited me on. Like, I figured it out. Then I applied it to my client work. I applied it to 61 Hugs and the results were the same. I tell you all this for one reason. Well, there's multiple reasons, but it's like almost 11 o'clock and I can't be asked to go through them all. But I want you to come along on this journey with me. And as I said, I'm going to tell you when the idea to write this book hit me, but I want you to come along on this journey with me. So before I forget, which is highly, highly likely, given how late it is and I'm kind of feeling a little bit sleepy, I want you to come along on this journey. So if you want to jump over to ckgolding.com and pop your email address into my mailing list, I'll be sharing some exclusive morsels during this writing journey via my mailing list. So if you're not yet signed up to my mailing list, ckgolding.com is going to be the place to be for some exclusives. So yeah, I would welcome and I would love to have you on my mailing list. I'm not sending that many emails at the moment, so the ones I do send will be exclusives, I guess. So visit my website, ckgolding.com, and join my mailing list for all my book updates. But yeah, I've been trying to figure out for ages how to just share what I've learned about marketing and promoting and publicizing the work, your work as an artist, my work as an artist. Like, what do I do every single time? And there are some videos on my YouTube channel when I talk about this, so please feel free to go and get involved. There's a post on my website called something. I've done no prep for this episode. There's a post on my website. If you go into my blog, there's a post on there called something along the lines of how do independent artists get attention, something like that. I honestly can't remember what it's called, but it's in my blog, so go and have a look. And it's pretty much that I've laid it out in there. This book, however, expands on everything I've ever said in video form and everything I've ever said on my blog, and it reveals things I've never said before about when I was doing my 2015 challenge. It reveals how I felt moments before going on TV. It reveals how I approach the press, the media, like the tricks that I apply to get them to feature my stuff. And it's just, the book is, I don't know if it's okay for me to say this, but I'm going to say it because it's what I've said to my two best friends. Someone is going to read that book. An independent artist is going to read that book. They're going to apply what I've written in that book and they're going to go viral. That's just a fact. And the only reason I can say that without any embarrassment or any sense of what a wanky thing to say is because it's basically what I do. It's like, it's just basically what I do. And if you're brave enough to stick your neck out and, you know, challenge your own inner demons of self-promoting is icky and uncomfortable, which, by the way, it is. I get it. And I talk about that in the book as well, how awkward and horrible and icky it feels. You know, us artists, we're meant to be creating cool stuff, not dicking about promoting ourselves. It feels few things for an artist are as uncomfortable as self-promotion. I get it. And I address that in the book as well. And I talk about how I or what I do to minimize that feeling. Because as an artist, I never completely feel free of that sense of awkwardness and discomfort and icky. I never do. But I guess I've got a little bit better at combating it and minimizing it. And I just talk you through what I do to achieve that. And I've always related to independent artists more than I relate to any group of human. So I just wanted to create this book just to share my learnings and look forward to stories of that one artist reading it, applying it, and going viral and enjoying it. And that will 100% happen. So, yeah, I am. Let me tell you why I've decided to write this book. It's very bizarre. So it was last Saturday. It was quite late, and I can't even remember what happened, but something came in my mind and said, are you going to write that book or what? Because I think I've discussed before, the idea of writing a book has always been nagging away in my mind, but I don't feel I have the necessary character traits to write a book. How many times in this podcast have I outlined my shortcomings, my three biggest shortcomings, which are counterproductive if you want to write a book? My three biggest shortcomings, which have been a theme of this podcast, are thus: I'm shit at goal setting. I am atrocious with discipline and I overthink everything. So imagine trying to write a book with those three shortcomings. It's like, it just doesn't make any conceivable sense. So on Saturday, when that voice returned and said, oi, dude, are you going to write this book or what? I was like, well, not really, because like, have we just met? But then, guess what happened? Guess what happened to completely flip my perspective? You'll enjoy this, right? I'll tell you what happened. The minute I had that voice saying, I don't think you're going to be writing a book somehow. What fucking planet are you on? Instantly, I remembered episode 33 of this podcast. Do you remember episode 33? It was called Beer and Porn. And it was when I was telling you of the UK porn star called Jim Slip, who, for all intents and purposes, looks like a geography teacher who's about to retire. He's the most ordinary-looking human being to ever grace tarmac. Yet still, he is something of a porn star. Moreover, he is regularly in a state of sexual entanglement with young, hot women, and it's just mind-boggling how he's got into that position. But I speculated that he's got into that position because he woke up one day and decided he wanted to be in that position. Because I just think as humans, we sometimes overthink, how has someone done this? How's someone done that? We underestimate the value of just deciding to do it. So the minute that little niggle in my head was saying, dude, are you going to write this book or what? And I was like, well, no, not really. I was like, well, hang on a minute. If that geography teacher can be a porn star, then you can write a fucking book. And that was like a real eye-opening moment for me. And I was like, actually, you're damn right, I can write a book. Because I love writing, ironically. As you'll have noticed if you've been hanging out with me on my website, ckgolding.com, during my interviews with people, I like the business of structuring the interview and writing the prelude to the interview before I get to the questions. I love all that shit. I do like writing, and actually it was through that process that I almost reconnected with my love of writing. So I've always loved writing as a kid, as a teen, as a student, Writing has always been something I enjoy doing. Now I do it professionally for brands, but just for pleasure, I've always enjoyed it. So all these things considered, episode 33, combined with my recent writing on my website, combined with my ongoing voice saying I should write a book, combined further with my affinity for artists. Can I remind you that over the years, I've like been hired by over 200 singer-songwriters to photograph them for their official marketing. Like, you will never find a group of artists more reluctant to self-promote than independent singer-songwriters. Well, I say that, it's mainly independent singer-songwriters I know. I don't know that many sculptors, to be fair. So that was a bit of hyperbole on my part. I'll take that back. But that being said, singer-songwriters, in my experience, are notoriously reticent about self-promotion. And that's one thing that that haunts me a little bit, because I know so many remarkable singer-songwriters, but they just have this barrier about self-promoting. And I do have sympathy with it. I'm not naive enough to say, just do it. I'm not that naive, because self-promotion comes easy to some and not so to others. I get it. And given my affinity and affection for artists, I just wanted to have a thing that I could just direct people to, that just literally spells out everything I've done since 2015, all the creative things and all the strategic things that I do to get myself featured in X, Y, and Z. So that's why I wanted to write. That's why I wanted to write this book. And that's why I'm going to write this book. And that's why on Saturday, when I had that thought, remember, I am a huge overthinker. So I knew that the longer I ruminated over the prospect of writing a book, the longer I thought about it, the longer I waited for my ducks to line up, and the more I felt, okay, I'm going to wait to be in the zone. I'm going to structure the book first. Okay, I need to figure out how I'm going to start it and how I'm going to continue it and how I'm going to end it. And I thought, actually, no, that is the classic mentality of an artist, waiting for everything to line up before you start. And one thing I've learned, and I will be referencing this in the book, one thing I've learned is that very, very rarely, if ever, does the overthinking benefit you. Never. My 7-part series, The Bench. My 7-part series, The Bench, I filmed episode 1 within seconds of the idea coming to me. And I've mentioned this before. I've never done that before. The idea came to me. I liked it. And I just filmed it. Usually I'd think about it and I'd sit on it for ages. But I thought, no, this idea is, I'm just going to run with it. That's exactly what happened with 61 Hugs. Although it was about 12 hours between idea and execution. So that was not as narrow as The Bench. But my point is this, both of them, well, 61 Hugs, 2 awards. The Bench, 0 awards, but people are fans. So I guess what I'm saying is that the older I've got and the more I've realised that there's very little to gain from having a protracted space of time between idea and execution, there's nothing to gain. And that's something that I've learned, and that is just something that I believe to be true. So the minute I had the idea for the book, flipped open my Mac and I started writing shit. Zero planning, zero prep, zero structure. Just word vomited onto my screen. And guess what? It worked. It worked. Like, the introduction section, depending on how I'm feeling, I might even read it to you in this podcast, actually. Let's see how bored I am towards the end. Or how tired I am. But the only thing I want to leave you with in terms of my opening 5-day journey of writing a book is, I know for a fact you've wanted to write a book before, right? Or at least the idea has, you found the idea intriguing, tantalizing, slightly romantic, right? I know that most people do. Just word vomit. I don't know if you agree with me, but I don't think there's anything to gain from the procrastination, because that, for the most part, certainly in my experience, it's that procrastination that has always been my undoing. What about you? Have you ever had an idea and just run with it? Just throw those words onto the page. Honestly, it's been remarkable. And guess how many words I'm at now? 5 days since the decision to write a book. Guess how many words? Just under 5,000. I think 4,930. 5,000 words. If you just said, I said that to my brother yesterday and he rang me. I don't really know what expectations are for someone writing their first book, but I told him yesterday that I've written 3,500 words, and he was like, what? You've written 3,500 words in 4 days. He was impressed, which delights me because you know, with him being one of my favorite of all the humans, that delighted me. So I don't know, just under 5,000, I think like 4,930 words so far. And my strategy has been just write every day. I started out saying write 250 words every single day. Just set that as your target. Today I wrote 900. Yesterday I wrote 700. So there's been some days when I've just carried on, but I guess I've just set myself a really achievable target. I have no interest in setting myself. I have no interest in pressure, and I think that is also where us artists sometimes come unstuck. We just pile untold amounts of pressure on ourselves, very rarely stopping to actually commend ourselves and say, well done. Like, do you know how many times I've said to myself, well done, dude, you've written every day for the last 5 days, and guess what? You have fuck all discipline. Yet still here you are, 5 days deep with just under 5,000 words. Artists and humans generally are so quick to beat ourselves up, and very rarely do we give ourselves a biscuit. Just give yourselves a biscuit sometimes. Right? I think that's key. You know, habits are something else I've discussed on this podcast, but I feel like I'm now in the habit of wanting to write. How many days did I say it takes to form a habit? Is it 21? It's 21, isn't it? And I'm like 25% of that, and I already feel like it's a habit. But I guess it's because I enjoy writing. So maybe the reason I found it Maybe the reason I found it easy to do and not feeling like a chore yet is because I set my target quite low and achievable. And if you set it low and achievable, you're more likely to exceed it. If I'd have said write a thousand words every day, that would have potentially felt insurmountable. But by complete fluke, I set my target at what I felt was achievable, like 250 words a day, and now I'm banging out between 600 and 1,000. So I don't know if that's of any value to you, but I found that to work. I found that to work, and it's just been a joy so far. And yeah, just come and hang out. Just visit my website and pop your email address, sign up, let's hang out, join me on this journey, and I will most likely be revealing this on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram in the coming days or something. But as I said, this is one for you first. I reckon I'll probably, I will, I might, yeah, I might read you that introduction during this, because your feedback could be glorious. Because I think I'm an all right writer. I think I'm relatively interesting. I think I make the stories engaging, but you might listen to this intro and think, stick to podcasts, dude. Stick to podcasts and jokes about willies. That's your lane, CK. JK Rowling is not panicking right now, dude. JK Rowling, she's just, no, she's still touching herself with her money. She's not bothered about you, dude. So, right, okay, listen, I've just mentioned my how I've psychologically tricked myself into writing more than I would have necessarily expected. And I guess psychology is very much in my head at the moment, because as I mentioned in last week's episode, episode 36, I recently discovered the cool psychologist online called Rochelle, whose podcast is called Psychology Talks. She's 23. She's from Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania. She's a graduate in psychology, currently studying her master's with a view to becoming a professional counselor. And she's just cool. She's outspoken. She calls it as it is. So I sent her a DM and said, I'd love to have you on the podcast from time to time, sharing and helping us and giving us some insight into how the mind works. And she was like, oh, all right. So let's have a chat. So we had a chat last week, and I'm just going to play a little bit of a clip from it. Now, I need to give you a bit of a warning. Basically, I recorded our chat through an app, which I'm never going to use again because I sounded awful. I sounded like I was underwater. So in the two clips I'm going to play for you, both of them super short. I just want to give you an insight into Rochelle and how her mind works and how she thinks and who she is as a person. They're super short clips, like 1.5 minutes a piece, and I'm not in them. So it's just because I sounded terrible. So this first clip starts with me asking Rochelle how it is that she's so bright and articulate and well-spoken. At 23, I wasn't that person at all. I wasn't an idiot, but she's just so together and switched on, and I just like it. And I was just curious to ask her how it is that, I don't know, I just like listening to her talk shit.
Talking shit. Yeah. Honestly, maybe this might make me sound a little bit pretentious, but something that I have become aware that I am resentful toward, if for lack of a better term, resentful, is that other people are not as good at communication. It really makes me confused. How do you not have the self-awareness? How do you not understand how you feel? How do you not have the ability to just put two and two together and then describe what you're thinking? It just doesn't make any sense to me. So really, I guess the answer to that question is it comes natural. I've never done like public speaking anywhere. I just naturally am a quite articulate person. And I don't know how I developed that over time. I just have. And I don't really understand how other people struggle with that and struggle with communication.
I'll tell you why. The reason I really enjoyed when she said that is because as a guy, hang on a minute, let me close this door. I don't even know why I had the door open. There we go. As a guy who enjoys the business of communication, whether it's written, whether it's spoken, or whether it's none of the above and it's nonverbal body language, just communication has always fascinated me. As you know, once again, I cite the previous 36 episodes, Psychology Brings Me Joy. But yeah, I mean, I echoed everything she said. Often I'm thinking to myself, like, how can't you, when I'm looking at plebs in front of me, like, how can't you just communicate properly? I don't get it. It's like we all had a free education. No, that's harsh. But it was really interesting. And I can confirm without any shame or embarrassment that I think I have a crush on her mind. I mean, I pretty much told her as such anyway, to be fair. So I don't know why. I don't even know why I'm even giving it the preamble. I've got a bit of a crush on the way she thinks, to be fair. And it was interesting. So I was thinking to myself, like, since when did I used to find the way somebody thinks interesting or attractive or hot? It's like, I don't think you ever have, dude. Like, you've traditionally been a normal dude. I mean, most normal dudes are always boobies. Boobies. I mean, I've never been a boob man, to be fair. But, you know, I'll take an ass like most dudes. But, you know, mostly it's been pretty basic fare for me. You know, I mean, that said, one of my exes did introduce me to the joy of being in a relationship with a remarkable cook. Jesus Christ, there was nothing that woman couldn't cook. Unbelievable. And she was an awesome human being as well, so she kind of had the full package. And I just realized that makes it sound like I didn't enjoy her mind, which I did. But from the point of view of like deep, deep psychological thinking and awareness and knowledge and inverted commas training, that's just different. That's like, that's a new proposition to me, and it delights me, to be honest. I'm like, yeah, just keep on talking, love. You know, I don't know. It's just, yeah. Brought me joy. It's like, okay. So either I need to go back to when I was 23 and find a version of her, or I need to find a version of her now. So I think the latter is probably going to be more attainable. So if there's any psychological or psychology nuts out there looking for a specimen of a man, then, you know, ck@ckgolding.com is the one. It also, given my realization that I enjoy a deep thinker, specifically a deep thinker that is adept in psychology, I just suddenly started thinking to myself, like, I started playing out small little scenarios. You know, I like to play out sketches in my head. And I just thought, I wonder if in the history of time, there's ever been a man who is so turned on by his girlfriend or wife's psychological dexterity that that's what gets him off, like her mind. And as like he gets off on her mind so much that it's almost, he's almost not bothered about the actual business of sex. Much to her dismay, is this dickhead gonna touch me? It's like been 3 months. We've not, forgive the language, people, but you know, I like to call a spade. She's like, we've not fucked in 3 months. Like, what is this? Oh, do you not find me attractive anymore? You're not attracted to me? No, of course. God, of course I find you attractive. Of course I'm attractive. Of course I'll. Yeah. Well, why won't you fuck me? Why won't you have sex with me? No. I no. It's your mind. It's your mind. I love your mind. Fuck my mind. And he's like, I'd love to. How would I even do that? Like, would I have to go in through your ear? Like. And then I was just playing out the scenario even further. Like she's 3 months with this guy who won't touch her. That'd be frustrating as fuck. And I got so wrapped up because bearing in mind I'm now 5 days into writing my own book. I think I'm in story mode because then I started giving these characters names and worlds and personality traits. And I, she was called Ellie, right? This guy. He didn't even have a name because, you know, any man who doesn't want to have sex with his bird is a clown. So I figured out, well, he'll just be called Clown. So then I wrote out this whole scene between Ellie and Clown, and I hope you enjoy said scene because here it is. It's been 3 months of no touch, no intimacy, no sex. She can take no more. Then suddenly, an idea. She realizes that getting this clown to show her some affection, any tenderness, will require cunning, subterfuge, and a disguise. The next day, Clown returns home from work. To his alarm, the house is pitch black. Ellie! He shouts, confused. I'm here! Shouts Ellie from the bedroom. Clown motions towards the stairs. He climbs them, puzzled. He walks along the hall and enters the bedroom. Immediately, he's aroused. He drops his case, smiles, and approaches the bed, eyes fixed on the dream scene before him. Yes, Ellie is dressed top to toe in a Freud costume, complete with white beard, suit, waistcoat, ball cap, and fake cigar. You like? She asks, barely able to find the words. Yes, I like, he replies. Ellie's eyes draw him nearer. Clown remains silent. Only dilated pupils betray his glee. Ellie lifts the duvet, revealing perfectly ironed slacks and polished black shoes. Clown climbs into the bed. As the duvet falls, their warm bodies are enclosed beneath cotton. Ellie pulls Clown closer, softly kissing his lips. He returns the sentiment while reaching down under the duvet, gently tracing the contour of her body from neck to hip. His hands slip further, inching across to her belly button, and then down beneath and between her thighs. Ellie is overcome. Finally, 3 long months, and now it's about to happen. As her moans escalate, Clown brings his hands closer, closer, closer towards her chin. Ellie doesn't understand. Why are his hands inching upwards? Why?
Why are they retreating from the special place? They were exactly where she had dreamed of all day. What is happening? His hands continue upwards, despite Ellie's frantic attempts to halt their ascent. Clown is too strong. Her efforts to quell the retreat are futile.
What are you doing? Why are you...
Silence. Ellie is horrified. Clown is excited.
What the fuck?
She barks.
Go on. Read it to me, please.
Clown himself is now the one in a state of sexual charge. Ellie, though, is incredulous, ashamed, disgusted. From where, she doesn't understand, but somehow, Clown is holding aloft a paperback copy of Sigmund Freud's A General Introduction to Psychoanalysis.
Please, Ellie, read it to me in his voice while stroking your beard. Please,
begs Clown. Mortified, defeated, crestfallen. Ellie shoots him in the face. The end.
That was bizarrely enjoyable. The writing process, by the way, I'm not arrogant enough to speak on your behalf. I delighted in writing that. I knocked it out in 6 or 7 minutes, maybe an extra 2 minutes to edit it. And I was like, oh, actually, that's all right, that. I do enjoy an abrupt end, you know. I can't decide if I ended it like that because it was funny and fitting or I got bored. And I was like, hang on a minute, I'm not even potentially getting paid for this. Like, why am I investing all this time? Just end, Jesus. And let's be honest, dude had it coming. I welcome your input on Ellie's story, as I've decided to call it. Ellie's story is what happens next with... Does anybody else want to write the following chapter? Why don't you write the next scene, like, if you want, and then send it to me? I don't know. I'm clutching at straws now because, my God, it is now 11:30. So Ellie's story was a joy and I enjoyed it. And I feel as though I would argue that had I not started doing... Do you remember, like, when was it? Was it even episode 33 when I spoke about a porn guy that I said I wanted to make my website a place to have interesting conversations with interesting people? I think it might have even been that episode. And I said that that's exactly what I'm going to do. And so just writing those interviews and features with people is just... this might sound like an overstatement, but it isn't. But I genuinely have felt like that's reawoken my love of writing, the stuff I've been doing on my website lately. So without me making that decision to start doing interviews on my website and sharing interesting stories with cool people, had I not made that commitment to myself, then A, I wouldn't have started writing my book, and B, we'd have never had the pleasure of Ellie shooting him in the face. I mean, I don't know if you have any pity for Clown. Stroke your fucking beard. Stroke your beard. But I guess... Maybe one takeaway from this episode then is that, you know, as artists, would you not agree, as artists or as humans, we sometimes want to be in control of everything. And if we're going to do something, we want to know what is going to be, if I begin step one, what's going to be step two? What's going to be step three? What's going to be step four? What's going to be step five? We want to know everything that's on the horizon, because as humans, we don't necessarily like the unknown. And we want everything to be known. But what I've discovered is that if we even take it back to when I decided to do the interviews on my website, if I do that, then I'll know what I'm going to get to a degree, but I'll probably not know something else nice that might come off the back of it. And I absolutely, unquestionably did not expect those interviews to reawaken my love of writing. And it did. And then as a knock-on side effect, I when the idea to write my book came into my mind, I was clearly in the right frame of mind. I was like, well, you're enjoying writing, so just carry on. So that, I think, is a huge takeaway for me, for you as an artist or you as a human, is that maybe we don't always necessarily need to know what step 2, 3, 4 through to 15 are. Maybe just committing to step 1 is sufficient. Are you one of those people that wants to know every step? I guarantee as an artist, I want to know every step. I mean, that's just my default, but I am trying to get better at being okay with not even knowing step 2. That's certainly how I've approached the first 5,000 words of this book. Like, I don't know what I'm going to write next. I'll just write this and see where it takes me. Then I'll write some more. That has literally been my process. And the book isn't necessarily chronological. 1 minute I'm talking about the book opens, I think, as I said, I think the book opens like minutes before my first TV interview in 2015. Then it jumps to present day and it jumps around a lot. But I am so obsessive about sequencing and storytelling that I would only do that if I believed I could pull it off and it wasn't annoying and confusing to the reader. So I want you to bear that in mind, that it isn't chronological, but I don't do that to be clever. I do that because I would find that approach engaging, but I'm obsessed about making it coherent as well. So it isn't, no, on it skips times, and I use things I learned in 2015 to apply to when I'm releasing something in 2019 and how the two things correlate. So I'm super excited. I've given myself until next September to release it, maybe. I can't believe I've just said that, because now I've just put my neck on the line, but maybe that's why I did it, so that I've got someone holding me accountable. So in my head, I've provisionally pegged September 2021 as the release date. So in an ideal world, I'd have written the thing by like maybe February-ish, March-ish, maybe February at the latest, March, and then gives me 3 months to do all the other shit that has to come along with like publishing a book, I guess. Anyway, they're just provisionals, but I wanted you guys on the podcast here to get all that stuff first. Again, I've said this 3 times, but I think saying it 30 times wouldn't be enough, just to thank you for hanging out with me every week and telling your friends about it and tweeting about it. I genuinely appreciate it. I had something else that I wanted to do. Oh, yes. Yes, I have my final clip from Rochelle, because given Clown and Ellie, let's be honest, Clown has no game, right? Clown has no game whatsoever. And one of my favorite episodes of Rochelle's podcast is called Why Nice Guys Finish Last. And it's not as vacuous as it sounds. That sounds like she's just going to be hating on guys who aren't arrogant dickheads. That's not what she's doing at all. She's very measured in what she's saying, and it makes so much sense. And one thing that she says in that podcast, which has been swilling around in my head ever since, because it's just so clever and insightful and I love it, and it applies to so much of our life, not just our romantic life, it's called fixed interval ratio. And she likens the concept of fixed interval ratio to gambling, and she draws parallels between why we get addicted to gambling and why people get addicted to people who treat them in a seemingly dispassionate way. I'm just going to let Rochelle explain exactly what fixed interval ratio is.
This is the general explanation of fixed interval ratio, when you get it sometimes but you don't get it all the time. So let's say a guy gives, because I date dudes, let's just give that example, but you know, a dude gives girl attention sometimes, or to hook up with her sometimes, or spend time with her sometimes, but then he's very unresponsive a lot of the time, takes 4, 5, 6+ hours to respond, but she's still thinking about the fact that she once had it and doesn't know the next time she's going to get it, she's going to be that much more interested in chasing it, which is so stupid, because to me, it's like, that's disgusting. You know what I mean? Like one of the main things that made me so attracted to my current partner is how consistent he was and how he kept like you know, just, it was just very consistent, like every day of quarantine that we were talking, it was just all throughout the day and telling me that he wanted to see me. And, you know, when things actually opened and it turned yellow zone, like I was attracted to the consistency, but that's because I'm a healthy, normal person. But the average person that doesn't have self-awareness is just going off of what's interesting. And that's, they're just, oh, I don't know what that is. I'm interested by that. I'm intrigued by that. So they just keep chasing things without even understanding, like, oh, this isn't a high quality partner. This isn't going to be a great long-term relationship, or that person's hurting me now. Imagine what they can do to me in the future. But hey, I'm interested. I'm intrigued. Let's keep carrying on with this. And then you just keep ending up with fuck boys or with player girls, whatever the term is. And then you're just wasting so much time. But it's just a part of our psychology that so many people fall into. And it's definitely unfortunate, because what I wish is for people to value loyalty and consistency. But the average person, especially in America, I know you're from the UK, but in American culture, it's all about individualism and not being loyal to people and finding the next best thing and the next best looking girl or guy, or they have more money or they have a better job. And you know what I mean? It's just how it is, like with friendships and romantic relationships. So I wish that it was more focused on loyalty and the things that I highly, highly value, and any of that other garbage I put to the side and don't even think about it for 2 seconds. But the average person doesn't. So.
And that's Rochelle, my new favorite human, and obviously my new crush. Let's be honest, like, you know, you can't argue with her insight, I'm afraid. You just can't argue with it. So Rochelle will be hanging out on this podcast from time to time whenever I have some questions and I demand answers from a psychological standpoint. She'll be chipping in with her thoughts, and I will sort out my recording device so that Rochelle and I can actually talk and it's not just me randomly playing a human's voice to you. She's a bit weird. So go find Rochelle on your favorite podcast listening platform. Her podcast is called Psychology Talks. And it's a revelation. Massive fan. Go check it out. Now, I'm going to leave you. I've decided that I am going to leave you with I'm going to leave you with an excerpt from, this is currently how my debut book opens. This is an excerpt from the, I don't know if you call it an introduction or a prelude or whatever, but this is the first page, I guess. I'm going to read this to you now, and then that's literally it. The podcast is going to end. I'm not going to come back after this because I don't want to. I want the final words of this opening section to be all you listen to, and thus enabling it to swirl around in your head a little bit. And then you can come find me on Twitter and Instagram and or Facebook or wherever, and just let me know what your thoughts are. Does that in any way, shape or form pique your interest? Does that make you think, oh, actually, I want to read more, please. I have absolutely no interest in you stroking my balls. And what I mean by that is my ego, right? Don't be telling me it's good when really you think it's average. If you think, I've heard shit like that before, whatever, then tell me that. If you're intrigued, tell me that. Tell me whatever you please. Just come and tell me something, because it's my first book and I'm delighted to have just set off on this little journey, and you're going to be coming along with me. Anyway, I feel like I'm talking shit now. It is 11:30 and I have nothing further to say, but I'm going to leave you the closing. Or should I say, I'm going to leave you the intro to my book. You and I will hang out next week. Introduction. The high of making it. Do you remember the last time you felt pure joy in your stomach? Your heart was full, time stood still, and your excitement was bigger than the room. Now imagine if that feeling lasted for 3 years. In the fourth year, however, everything changed. As you look back on that moment, you laugh at how naive you were. Sure, your happiness was real, but in hindsight, it was also a little deluded. This is how I feel when I reflect on my first ever TV appearance. It was September 2015, and finally, I was a someone worthy of being interviewed on TV. I felt like Sheffield's Kanye.
I must have stared at that TV producer's email invitation for 25 minutes straight. In the end, my TV debut itself was wonderful. I couldn't have asked for more. In fact, it was everything I hoped for, and so much more. We'll discuss how I lost my TV virginity later, because right now, all I want you to know is this. I was invited onto TV not because I was a someone, but because I had created a something. I dreamt up an idea that caught the public's imagination, and the TV channel thought it was cool, so of course they invited me on to talk about it. Well, guess what? You can do it too. Anyone with an email address and a smidge of creativity can do it. I'm going to stick my neck on the line and predict that as you race through this book, gripped by my wit and scintillating turn of phrase, you'll have several lightbulb moments. You'll beam with joy and slap your face with dismay as you realise just how straightforward it is to get noticed, attract attention, and enjoy a little fame. I'm going to show you how. All I ask of you is that for each lightbulb moment you have, you send me a Snickers to say thanks. I fucking love those nutty slabs of sugared goodness. Now, you're not obliged to participate in this wisdom for snacks exchange, of course not, but to not do so would be plain odd. I mean, is that really how you were raised? Bizarre.